Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Here we go. Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most. I just haven't had my second caffeine. My shots.
Yeah, you got water.
I got water. That's no good for caffeine, man. Anyways, we're just going to jump right into this interview. Eddie's got a show tonight, but we're just going to jump right in. We've got Mr. Corey James. Corey, I don't even know where you're from. Where are you from?
Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson, all the way from Tucson, Arizona, Mr. Corey James. Hold on. Our studio audience loves you. Yeah. Silence. And just silence them just like that. So from Tucson, Arizona, that's kind of it's got a music community, right?
For sure.
Let's just jump right in. Like, what was the thing that made you get into music? Did you come from a musical family? Did you start playing piano or guitar way young?
All of the things, man. I did not come from a musical family, but I grew up in a church. You know, like those stories. But it was a church of, like, I was a poor kid in the desert. It was like a church of thousands.
Wow.
So it was, a proper mega church. And I thought all churches were like that, but I didn't travel much.
Right,
not
right,
the case.
Right.
But big churches have a vacuum of great musicians. So in Tucson, I got a chance in, like, the church I was at. A bass player who was like an original bass player for the Commodores.
Oh, wow.
You know,
was it like a Baptist church or what?
An evangelical cult.
Okay. That's cool. Whatever works.
It was like a circus. But no, from the music standpoint alone, I saw a drummer, a young drummer who just texted me today. He's in LA tomorrow. All these full circle moments are happening. It's such a trip. But he was my mentor, my first mentor. I saw this badass young drummer playing. I was like, man, I don't know about the preacher. I don't know about all this other stuff, but that drummer, like, you can't turn him off. And
right.
He crushes it, and he's so dope. He was, like, a prodigy out of, south of Tucson, and had mentors of, like, jazz legends in Sedona.
Wow.
And he went to Berklee College of Music.
Okay.
You know, I think, is that where you went
to? Yeah. No, I went to USC, but okay, I know a lot of cats.
Yeah, of course, of course. So it was a program called Berklee Sedona Jazz on the Rocks, where young high school cats come and, like, they get scholarships to go for the summer, and then out of the summer they vet for the thing. So he was like, he got
just
like the highest ranking.
Yeah, right.
So he's a drummer that's like the most, to this day, one of the most musical finesse drummers. I'd say. Not like the most chops. You never hear him play.
No, you know what though? It's like, you know, as I get older too, it's like chops don't impress me as much as feel, groove. The fundamentals. It's like,
yes. Like
same with singers. It's like you can sing me every lick under the sun, but it's like if you can't sing one note and move me, then we got a problem.
Yeah, music is to be felt.
Yeah,
you know. So that, I guess in the church thing, it is what it is. Like, you know, it's a performance. You know, in the religious world, they're like, oh, it's not a performance, but it's for God, and I totally feel that. But for me personally, but from a presentation, you're like, yo, you're making it real. You can be in a practice room all day long. But when you're playing with live musicians, you have to listen in real time.
It becomes a communal thing.
And now there's click tracks. You know, modern day, I'm a part of a church in LA. It's like, you know, really really nice production. But it's all click track and stems.
Right.
But it was like the drummer's got to feel 110 and stay there, you know?
Yeah.
And
old school. Very old school.
And if you're off, TC on the bass, who used to play in the Commodores, will let you know.
Right. He'd be like, that's not going to work.
No, too much.
And was it like soul music, rock music, a little bit of everything?
Well, church music is a mix of, like, you know, gospel and soul. It's kind of like, how do you describe gospel? It's more like, it's for congregational, you know, it's set for congregational, a lot of repetition.
Right.
Simple melodies, you know. That's how I describe congregational music. But that's what I know.
So I started I started singing in church too.
Oh, same thing.
I started in classical music.
Interesting. Because
like really like, you know, real old school church music is,
for example,
Baroque, like, you know, yes, all the Bach stuff, uh-huh, all the Mozart stuff. It's all for church, usually. Yes. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I was like way into the classical stuff. Cool. So I was like, when I hear about churches doing the gospel, like I'm super jealous of all the Baptists, like gospel churches in the South.
It's a different world.
Yeah, it's just like, oh man, this is all field. This is all like crazy, funky, soulful, awesome stuff in a different light than the classical stuff.
That's,
so
well,
that's why I'm so curious, you know?
Well, I ended up in the classical world because I went to University of Arizona School of Music.
Okay.
And I studied classical music.
Okay.
But I was the struggling church cat that couldn't read.
Right, right.
But had all this feel.
Right.
So clashing in with the classical world, I was the lowest on the totem pole, but if people spent a couple of hours to get ready for their juries, I was there for 4 or 5 hours because I was like, oh my God, that's my dream come true.
Right.
Poor kid is like, I'm uninterrupted. I got a practice room with a drum kit to myself. I'm playing marimba. I'm like, this is a fucking trip. I'm learning piano with things I can hit.
Yes.
Like little boy's dream come true. You
yes.
know? Like,
and you have the accessibility to everything.
Everything. And like, yo, timpani are like, that drum is $15,000.
Right.
Poor kid from Tucson goes, I will never probably be able to buy this thing.
Right.
Now it's sampled, but I was like, to be able to play and vibrate with it, then contextualize that in a philharmonic.
Right.
Get the fuck out of here, man. There's nothing better. So I'm like, I transcended church, but music took me there. You know, my love for music was always the constant. I you know, the programs, whatever, but it's always like wherever I can enjoy music, that's always been my constant. So then coming out here, pursuing it professionally.
Were you playing any instruments before you came out here, or was it all just singing or combination?
Everything in the percussion world, and then when I was in music school, I was having my own kind of parallel thing because I saw the writing on the wall. I was like, I feel like there's no jobs for people with music degrees.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
I saw that, but I was like, I'm gonna extract what I can, and I had bands on the side. I had like recording projects. So I was like doing a double dip. Like I was like, all right, I'm gonna learn this stuff. I'm gonna do my juries. I'm gonna do this stuff and just do what I can, but at the same time, I want to contextualize it because I feel like it doesn't really do that. Like, I was hoping for the goods, like what you're doing. Imagine if you had someone like you, you're probably hoping that that's what music school and would have given you.
You know what?
It doesn't do that.
It doesn't do that.
They
it,
keep you away from the goods.
The weird thing, thing about music schools in general is they put you in an environment with all the best musicians in the country, or all the people that are like top of their neighborhoods, all in one area.
Yes.
And they do not challenge everybody together with the curriculum.
Yeah.
It's the strangest thing. Like,
it's so
strange. In some ways they do, but in a lot of ways they don't. And like what I ended up doing was learning from the environment, not necessarily the classes. And maybe a couple teachers that I was like inspired by that, like,
maybe
met
a couple
me. Yeah,
which is weird,
but it shouldn't be that way. It should be like every teacher should be this inspiring mega deal, you know,
and they should be teaching from a place of like experience.
Yeah.
Like, so that was me. I was like, I'm not trying to be an asshole, but I'm like,
right,
what the fuck have you done? I'm like,
right,
so
yes,
you played in a jazz band in the 80s that made a little bit of money.
Right.
I don't care about
right
that. Like, I love jazz. I'm a jazzer. Like, I play drums.
Yes.
But I'm like, I exhausted everything I possibly could as a jazz drummer in backing up vocal jazz combos and shit like
right
that. I'm like, that's fun for like 5 seconds.
Right.
But if I'm being honest, I want to dig into like, yo, maybe it's the rock and roll in me. I just want to make an album.
Yeah.
Like, is
yeah
that weird that I want to like go, okay, all this fucking weird shit in the world. My magician father-in-law makes me very informed of what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
Despite my like meditative music energy, I don't want to hear it. You know, he gives me no choice. You know, and I'm shepherding his daughter, so I have to listen.
Right.
But knowing that, I just keep it focused on the main thing. I'm like, I'm on these keys. I'm on my guitar. I'm on my drums. You know, my 1956 Rogers that still sounds really dope. I got my dream space, and it's not a lot. It's a small space, but I've got my instruments. I told Lynette, my wife, before we moved into the space, I said, you know, all I know is, before we were looking at our new space, I dropped it like this. I didn't tell her what to do, but I was like, yo, as you're looking for this space, I trust you aesthetically. You are, and she's beautiful, so she knows what's up. And I said, all I know is I've been the most happy when I have access to my drums.
Right.
And I have access to my keys.
Yeah.
And access to my guitar. That's what I know. And I just put that on her. And dude, we got this space where I can play drums whenever I want. There's no sound issue in LA and mid city.
Right.
It's not normal.
Right.
So I've got this nice studio spot where there's a lot of studio spaces where it's like, hey, let's make a track today and let's ship it off to whoever's gonna buy it. That's not my. It's just I'm writing songs. Rod Templeton, the writer of Thriller, spent 8 months in a cabin in Sweden by himself, and he wrote that shit by himself.
Right.
Three, 4 months just on the keys and the melodies.
Right.
That's what I like. I like the process of like, yo, there's no like, it's done. It's done when it's done.
Right.
If it takes a year, if it takes 8 months, if it takes 20 minutes, fantastic. But
I love all the processes.
I love all of it.
When it takes 20 minutes, when it takes years, when it takes
months.
That's
a miracle.
It's like, there's a gratification. You know what I mean? It's like,
yes.
Sometimes it's instant. Sometimes it's just like long, like
Noogie love and hate.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's the way it is.
Yeah.
But that's what makes it also intriguing. You know what I mean?
It's like mysterious.
Trying to find that quest of whatever the song is, wherever it's going to take you.
I think music will take you wherever.
Yes, yes, totally.
You know?
And when did you get like the songwriting bug? Like you came to school, was it before that? Were you writing songs in high school? Or did you start just because out of a necessity?
Bro, it was some severe disappointment in that other energy that we are not as males. It was some heavy heartbreak where I was like, I didn't know what else to do. Like,
right.
I was like, I need to make my own song. Like, I have to write something. I remember hitting up my only friend at my church that was like, had his own studio. I was like, yo, bro, I need you to do me a solid. Like, I got this letter. It was a real story, man. This is, like, totally the hopeless romantic in me. Like, I'm just, like, full dramatic, you know, whatever. I guess the artist thing. But this girl, like, I mean, the one you give it to, all that stuff, I was like, all right, as a church kid, I'm super programmed. I'm going to get married. Like, right. The whole thing.
Yeah.
Guilty, but, like, I love this person. There's, like, lust and all this other shit. And I was, like, very much, I was, like, the perfect candidate to lie to. Because if you're, like, a lying person, I would be the perfect person to be like, yeah, whatever you say.
Right.
You know, because
I'm,
like,
taking the face value.
Yeah, face value.
Yeah.
So I had, like, my first love, first, like, thing. You're young and dumb. But that letter, I remember writing a letter. I was always, like, a journaler. My mom taught me at a young age as a journaler. I never thought of it, like, book of lyrics. It was more like, okay, journaling. So I remember writing this letter, and she, like, would not read it. Because she was, like, I remember one of my buddies who I found out, who I've known for a long time, was like, yo, I slept with her. Like she was unfaithful to me with, like, homies that I knew. It was, like, small town drama shit.
That's tough.
So I was like, fuck this. And I was like, I know enough about music. I've never written a song before, but I'm going to turn this letter into a song. Dude, it stirred up so much drama on MySpace. The song goes out, and people are talking about it. Her dad, who was, like, an interesting character, tried to threaten me.
What? Over, like, a song?
Take the song down. Because it was me just basically telling
the
truth.
Right, right.
And it was like, but I wrote it clever enough where it's like, the fact that she knows that it was about her is why it was so convicting.
Right.
But I was like, anybody else was like, yo, that's a really sad ass song.
Right.
But it was in the time where, but it was like, all the emo shit was happening all that. That was the weird, like, Tucson subculture of music was screamo, emo, counterculture, pop music. No way we turn our nose up to that.
Right.
It's not it's just, if it's artsy and weird. And so screamo found its place and emo found its place. So I have this church thing going on that's very, like, you know, basic court. But then all this mix up of, like, metal and all these other things going on. Tucson was just open for art, but not a lot of incentive to, like, not a lot of money going around. So it's just, like, free art. So I was just like, when it was time for me to express myself and get into art, I was just like, man, I just feel like I had to. I was like, I just think, and maybe that's where a lot of people start. It's like,
Definitely an emotional, like,
some emotional
overflow.
Thing.
Yeah, some trauma of some sort. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess that's the best way I could put it. It was more like, I don't know a better way. I tried to write a letter, and that didn't express what I was feeling, you know. Like, so for someone to not even give you closure, to not even, you're like, all right, now I got to get into
this. I remember I took a songwriting class, and it was like, I've been going through, like, a breakup with a girl that from my high school that I was with forever. And he gave me the tools to use for therapy.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, you would, like, write your feelings.
Exactly.
Like, write it into prose, mm-hmm. use poetry, like, be clever, but not too clever, be honest. be as honest and real as possible. And it was just like, oh my God, this is the outlet. I remember just sitting.
This is the ticket.
Yeah, this is it. And it's like, I still have never gotten over that feeling of writing because of that. You know what I mean? It's just like what drives me always to get to that place, you know?
Well, then like, and then flash forward, like a bunch of songs like coming from Tucson. I'm like, I'm just writing songs because. And then I come to like LA and I get in this like commercial whirlwind of like publishing of recorded media. And I learned it all. And I still think it's a bunch of bullshit because I'm like, yo, there's a lot of, like resistant energy to just people expressing themselves freely.
Right.
And of course that's by design, but you go, man, if you get the right people to protect and shepherd like the creative process, all the messages that need to be heard will come out of that.
Well, it's also like what's bullshit about the industry. There's so many gatekeepers.
Yes.
And like a lot of the gatekeepers, I'm like, oh, really? How many music classes did you take? Oh, none? Oh, did you ever play an instrument? Oh, you never played an instrument? Were you in a band? Oh, you never were in a band? Oh, did you like listen to records?
You don't give a fuck about music.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's like this antithesis of what music's about. It's
right.
Like, so strange.
It's supposed to be free. So like billionaires talking about open source. I'm like, well, what does that open source messaging sound like? I wonder, you know, because I'm like, dude, the fact that people at a very high level in the music biz, I'm like, there's like the music conversation, there's the music language, then there's like the music biz. And like, that's where I have been notorious for just like people that are, I sense are not really creative producers. But they're like in studios.
Right. There's a lot of those.
I make them feel very uncomfortable.
Right.
On purpose, because I give no fucks. And they're like, you have a really hot wife. Like, I can't really say much to you.
Right. Your wife's listening like, thanks, Corey.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And she'll step in and be like, well, you know, now that I'm here, so I'll bring her into the studio sometimes as my little secret weapon. And she'll echo the things that I say. But when she says it, they're like.
It's not smart.
It's really smart. Yeah, and you look at her and you're like, damn, when she says what you say, Corey, I gotta be honest, it's a lot nicer to listen to her say it. I'm like, I know. Dude, it's such a trip. I'm holding it down for marriage in the middle of like millennial marriage, in the middle of the fucking music industry. My wife's a beauty influencer. Dude, we have had an earful of so many stories about people trying to make money off of content in this new like wild, wild west. Content is king. In her case, it's queen. And, dude, I've watched, all credit where credit is due, I've watched in the last 3 years do mega deals as a beauty influencer with big brands, and still people don't know what they want.
Right.
And you know what? Maybe it's my music bias, or maybe I'm right. I kind of feel like we're lacking a lot of soul.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, music's where it's at, dude. Yeah. Like, I'm not even going to trip. I'm like, listen, I think if we hold it down, independent artists are going to kind of hold it down in the end, because... you are the publishing company of your own shit. You are the label.
Yeah.
If you took it end to end, we do the corporate shit, so we do this unbelievably complicated legal stuff that you will never understand as an artist. I'm one of those curious people. I'm like, I have a business background too. I don't tell people that. I'm like Gemini Cancer, so I have a music degree and I have a business degree. So I don't lead with that, but I kind of play a stupid music teacher to see how far, like, because I'm just curious enough to go, all right, you're wasting my time away from making music, but I do want to know how these deals are made. Who makes them?
Right.
Like, I'm like, so what if I made a better deal?
Right.
Like, what if I know all these magic contacts? What if I am the magic contact? You know? And I just was like, this is all bullshit. You know, for the most part, I was like, so what about, like, getting all unnecessary people out of the way? No offense. But there's business development people that go, when we finish our work, if you have relationships with networks, and great. When it's done, we'll figure out a nice 80-20 split, how they do in the industry, where if you bring business to the table, great. There's lots of people that can do that.
Right.
But as far as getting involved in, like, writing camps, like, I was asking my buddy who's assigned to Warner. I was like, yo, what's your favorite experience as a writing camp? Because me, as an independent writer, producer, I've worked with
him. He's, like, leaving the writing camp?
Well, he's, like, literally. And I'm like, yo, the dream is the writing camp, I feel like, to be able to get all your homies together and, like, but... the fact that he told me, like, at Warner Chapel, he's like, I hate writing camps. I was like, don't tell me this. What are you talking about? He goes, well, here's why. You get these executive, they're in the room trying to like get there's money, and they should not be involved at all. They should be so far away from the studio, and they're like bloating the process, I guess.
Right.
And you're going, okay, so if you just had end to end, there's the ideation, development, production, sales, distribution, but cut that in half. Like sales, distribution, marketing, there's a million people that'll do that. But the most precious part is the ideation. Like, who's going to get something from nothing? And here's an empty room, and now we have something. Dude, being in that process enough, you two, that needs to be protected and shepherded, and also going, we need to reevaluate. What's the value of that? Dude, writers get fucked. They get so fucked. And they're the heroes, as far as I'm concerned. Where else would there be content? Artists are distribution channels. Like, even Michael Jackson. The distribution channel. Some people out there are going, whoa, careful what you say, fella. But I'm like, yo, he was the distribution channel for the highest grossing song ever, Thriller.
You're right.
He's the distribution channel. But he knows that he commissioned Rod Temple-ton to write the song. So that's why I love telling story about, like, yo, it takes an army. There's no such thing as a solo artist.
Right. There's a whole team.
Fucking army.
Yeah.
And then you get into the marketing of it. There's scientists that are studying, like, how to get people to pay attention to things on the internet. Dude. I don't have time for that.
But well, you just have to focus on being the writer that you want to be. You know what I mean? Like, that's the biggest thing. It's like, make music that you want to hear.
Yeah, that's, and there's like other people that do force. Things that you hate.
Right.
You know?
So did you start with piano after drums, or did you start with guitar first?
It was drums, and then guitar felt natural, where I could kind of mimic, grooves of drums on guitar that felt good to me, and then it was keys.
And what's do you have a favorite? Or is it kind of like you just meander between both
or all? I like to test between those three, like when I'm writing a song. But if you made me choose, especially with this keyboard, it's allowed me to pull it. Like, it really does. Like, with the tube, instead of it being digital, I've just, like, really geeked out on the sounds. And it allows me to just go in, like, different worlds, you know? So I'm like, I prefer the keys because, you know, engineer producers that are like, all right, we have this whole data bank. I like to limit my variables because I get so lost.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's easy to get lost. Yeah, for sure.
So I'm like, I know myself. So I'm like, if I can go, I have 8 sounds that I choose. I know what they are. So if I need like a string sound, I've got it. If I've got like an organ sound, I've got it. And I just pick like one, you know? So I've got like my Rhodes sound. I've got my regular piano sound, you know? And that gives me like the ability to kind of try all of those sounds when I'm writing a song. So I can imagine the remixes. I can imagine the reimagination. That if there could be, you know, I write all songs as if I'm never going to sing them.
Well, let's hear. What are you going to play for us first?
Oh, cool, man. Well, did you want to play something off of the tracks, or do you want to play something?
No, I'm going to have to play something live first. Okay, I usually like to do live track live.
Okay, dope. Well, this song, just last, I saw that you posted about it, which was cool, dude. It was such a trip. I had this opportunity with that guy Nati that you met, which is so funny. We played, it was like 20,000 people down at this Bird's Nest Fest.
I know, that's what I heard. Chainsmokers and Snoop Dogg.
I went right in between Snoop Dogg and Chainsmokers.
Awesome.
So for all independent artists out there that are holding it down, I went from like bedroom composer, arranger to 20,000 people just putting out good vibes.
Amazing.
And trusting the process. And it was like, my wife goes, Corey, I know you don't really fully get this, but you literally just went like 0 to 1,000.
You're like, I know.
And we had a whole crew to film it. So it was like stars born shit. It was so fun. And I'm just like, and then there's like there's been so much energy since.
Right.
That this is perfect timing, you know? So anyways, this song that we did was called We Are The Ones. I even got a tattoo. This is the second tattoo. My first one was my wedding date. So I was so serious about this song, and you can prove it in real time.
That's tight, yep.
Yeah, We Are The Ones. So that's the song I'm going to play today.
Okay, cool.
And here's like my version. The one that we did that Nati's mix was more kind of like more upbeat. I kind of have more of a minor version. But basically, it's a Native American proverb. We are the ones we have been waiting for is the whole statement. And it's kind of the sentiment of, if everyone believed they were the hero in their own journey.
So, I love it.
So yeah, if you had your guitar, I would have you rock with me. I don't choose very complicated chords.
That's all right.
I don't have my sustain pedal, so we're gonna have to roll with it. And we are the ones, we are the ones. We'll waiting for. I said, what would you think? What would you think if I told you everything, everything that they taught you is wrong? Say, what would you think? What would you think if I showed you that your frequencies were already on? What if I told you? What if I showed you? I know the secret to the master plan, and I do. What if I showed you? What if I told you? I know the secret to the master plan, and I do. This is the multiverse. This ain't your average church. You are the universe, and we are the ones. We are the ones. This is the multiverse. This ain't your average church. You are the universe, and we are the ones. We are the ones that we're waiting for. 3, 2, 1. Everyone sons. You are the everyone sons, and we are the ones that we're waiting for. 3, 2, 1. Everyone sons, you are the everyone sons, and we are the ones. Yeah, who could we be if there was no you and there was no me? Thinking all of the possibilities of what all of us would see. Who could we be if there was no you and there was no me? Thinking all of the possibilities of what all of us would see. What if I told you? What if I showed you? I know the secret to the master plan, and I do. Ooh. What if I told you? What if I showed you? I know the secret to the master plan, and I do. This is the multiverse. This ain't your average church. You are the universe, and we are the ones. We are the ones. This is the multiverse. This ain't your average church. You are the universe, and we are the ones. We are the ones that we're waiting for.
Trance, man. Woo! That was tight, man. I loved it.
Without my sustain pedal, I was improvising.
You know what? That's all. It's so funny that you say that, because sometimes I have to track without a sustain pedal. Like, I'll have an engineer say, like, don't do any sustain just because we can add it later.
Right.
And I hate tracking like that. So it, you just don't feel it. You don't feel like that. You know, the notes kind of blending in together. I love that. I've always loved that. That's like one of my favorite things. So I totally feel. I felt your pain. But I was like, but you still were creating a vibe, man. You still were like making it happen. I want to, you know, bring up an interesting point, because we met through a very close friend of ours that passed away, Mike Aiea, saxophonist of my band. And you lived with him. How long did you live with him for?
About a couple of years. Lynn a little longer. Maybe about a year and a half. Lynn more, 2 years. But yeah, man, Mike Aiea was is still a legend.
Yeah, man. Legend. I miss that cat so much,
he's
man.
He's still vibing with us, bro. I feel like he set this up for something. Like, he's working, you know what I mean? Like the mystical vibes. I
love about him is like he was such a kid.
Yeah.
You know, he was such a jovial, like there was always an adventure. He and I used to laugh a lot. And then what I love is like my closest connections, I think, in life are when you can be kids off stage and then you get up and you're the ultimate professional in that musical moment. And it's like he was that to the extreme.
Super heroic.
Yes. So like it's awesome that he brought us together. Yes. And I wanted to bring that up because it was just the recent 1 year anniversary of his passing.
Yeah.
So rest in peace. It's awesome that you're here. Yeah, man. All right. So let me ask you this too. So you came to LA. Why'd you choose Los Angeles over New York or any other city? There's a lot of music cities.
Of course.
Nashville, Memphis. What was the thing about LA that just made it more appealing?
Yeah, the great question, man. Just like any other small town, you hit that glass ceiling. I was actually beelining towards New York. And Lane and I were dating in Tucson. There's this underlying romantic C plot story always in the backdrop. But she was like, yo, I took a job in L.A. And I was like, well, I'm planning on going to New York, and that was going to be it. But then on the weekend, I'm not even joking. I cannot make this shit up. The weekend she's getting her job, the one that she got that brought her to L.A., there was season 3 of auditions for The Voice. And I had parents of some of my students. I've been teaching private coaching of songwriting for a little while through my agency, My Town Music, that started in Tucson, while I was doing my own thing and just working with kids and developing them too. That was how I made my income. And so I had parents being like, yo, if that ever comes up, I feel like with your story and your talent, Corey, it would be so good like to do The Voice or something. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do like a reality show, like whatever. So it just so happened to fall like the weekend that she was doing her thing. So I was like, yo, I'll do that, you do that. She gets her job, I make it through like several layers of The Voice.
Wow, that's crazy.
And I sang, dude, I came guns loaded. I was like, well, I'm gonna honor my legend. And I sang Heaven Help Us All by Stevie Wonder.
Oh, awesome.
Right?
Did you get a coach? Did you get to that point?
Dude, I brought my guitar. They're like, what the fuck are you doing with that? You can't use your guitar. I was like, what? I'm the church boy that always has my guitar.
Right.
So I had to do an acapella on the little line. It was super weird.
Oh, wow.
And they're like, look, dude, like, the Stevie Wonder thing is cool, but it's a TV show. Could you sing something a 26-year-old hipster would sing? And I sang Stop and Stare by One Republic. And they're like, here you go. And they fast-passed me, and they brought me back a week later, and they started filming me. And then I had a buddy from Phoenix that was doing the music thing. Was like, yo, are you moving out? I was like, no, I'm moving to New York. He's like, because I was posting a little bit that I could about the audition process stuff. He's like, yo, like, call me. And I was like, what? He's like, yo, I got this church gig that I could offer you. I think you're perfect for it. And they were able to pay me, like, I did a Thursday night rehearsal and a Sunday band. I was out in Signal Hill in Long Beach. And it basically covered my own one-bedroom apartment right a block from the ocean doing a church gig. And I was like, I swore I would never do that. But it was so cool, and people were so vibey. It was different than Tucson.
Right.
So that's what brought me to L.A.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Who was your coach? Did you get to that level?
No, I got right before blind auditions. There was three. So the people who are curious about how it works, there's 3 or 4 or 5 layers.
Right.
Of like auditions where they're filming.
Where you just doing it for producers.
Yes, you go on stage. They want to see you with a band, whatever. But then when it came down to it, they have a lot of it. It's predestined.
I know. What I mean? Yes.
It's kind of like, it could be so dope. Everything in Hollywood could be dope.
One of my friends won
it. Get the fuck out of here.
He won the first season. And we had done a bunch of Javier Colon.
Okay, tight.
And, we had done a bunch of college touring together.
Yeah.
So I ran into him, and then I'm like, man, you and I used to do all the college touring. You don't need to do that anymore. He's like, actually, no. Yeah. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, they're not pushing my record. And I'm like, what do you mean they're not pushing your record? When's your record out? And he's like, it's been out. And I was like, sorry. Bro, I didn't know, man.
Listen,
he said, that's exactly it, So it sucks.
As a publishing recorded media kind of guy, as a part of my process, here's what I've learned. Dude, The Voice and shows like that, it's name one sustained successful artist from all 155 fucking seasons of any.
I know.
Well, it's not supposed to do that. It's if you pay attention to the recorded media properties that are being covered, it's profiting off of these American stories, contextualizing and repackaging the same songs that the company that owns The Voice, it's the same company that owns those songs.
Yeah, Harry Fox and all of those.
They own those songs. Right. So they're going, yeah, we're going to tell you what songs you're going to sing. They're going to be the songs that we own. And right. you're going to be on iTunes when they download them off of the show. We just made another big old chunk of change. Right. So it's a marketing tool to sell more songs.
And the winners are like really the judges.
Yeah.
Like that's what I always say. I always say, and the winner is the judges.
Right. You know, because you're like,
they're the ones making a crazy amount
of
money.
And getting all the shine.
And it sucks because it's like, you know, like I see Blake and, you know, Adam Levine, and I've met Adam Levine and John Legend on there now. And it's I'll see like an okay performance and they'll be like all aces. They'll be like sometimes they're really honest, but like it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a great performance or it's a terrible performance because sometimes that person can advance no matter what they think. So it's kind of like this weird circus of. Oh, yeah, you know, these opinions matter, but they don't.
You know what I think would be way doper? Change nothing, keep the same characters, but make them collaborate around each of those voices. Going, let's make a super song that honors this person's story.
Right.
And Blake and Adam, they all collaborate as co-producers.
Yeah.
And they make... Dude, I know friends that were like... had hits on the last, you know, were on the last Justin Bieber record. I was part of writing camps for that album. And I didn't have any, I had songs very close, but, and, like, buddies of mine that have many tracks with, buying houses now, traveling the world, were on that album.
Right.
And so I was like, yo, I've looked at those, the credits. There's sometimes 13, you know this.
Yeah.
13, 14, 15 people on a song.
Some of them didn't even write the song.
And they didn't do shit. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, let's not do that. But what about people who actually go earn your keep and everybody surround and actually do that? Let's say it was 5, 8 people.
Yeah.
But you get... big minds like that surrounding each of those voices, and then all of America and all of the world goes super song, super artist, came out of nowhere, Hail Mary, and all these big, that would be a show.
I agree.
I think that'd be a way fucking doper show.
But
too.
See that what they don't like.
Somebody
about
make
that
show.
So many other people would make money off that, and not the people that are running the show, and that's what they don't
the
want.
The voice from America would get a lot of bread.
Yeah,
and that would be tight. I think that'd be super tight because you're like, it's like Shark Tank. They're funding people.
Right.
Take Shark Tank. In the art industry, and I'm telling you, man, right now everyone's going, yo, I want to make money with my social media. I want to make a YouTube channel. So, dude, open the floodgates and hook people up, like microfinance. Like, okay, SpaceX was a product of this gamification of entrepreneurs, the X Prize, and I was a competitor, actually, a team of learning scientists that I know, where we collaborated with music and a bunch of art to compete in the Global Learning X Prize. It was a 4-year competition. Where, you know, entrepreneurs are incentivized like a $15 million purse from billionaires like Elon Musk, et cetera, et cetera. They go, to solve learning, we don't know the answer, but entrepreneurs, there's a $15 million purse for those that can sustain global learning. And that's like a fun game. What if you did that for microfinance and artists?
Yeah.
That would change the game. That's like the new finance industry, but it's transparent. Like, there's this platform I found called Royalty. What's it called? Royalty Exchange, I think. .com.
Yeah.
And where you as an investor, say you have money and you have a good ear, for example, a lot of those guys out there. Well, you could see this up and coming undiscovered catalog. You can hear this catalog of an up and coming, and you go, you know, I really got a good feeling that I'm going to take a ride. And the publisher, the writer, gets to open up on the platform saying, I'm offering for 25% of my entire catalog, I'm looking for this amount of investment. So investor could call bullshit and renegotiate, or they could be like, you know what? I get it. I think that you're going to really do something. And they get to take a 75-year run on their investment to just get a little piece of this artist. They get the financing they need to do their thing. And somebody that really believes in it takes one of those with one of those guys. And there's
There's room.
That's fucking
dope. There's room for all of it.
There's people who gamble that spend... however much money a year, and they make no money. You watch people at Vegas, you're like, do you realize how this works? Do you get what's going on?
So let me ask you this. When you came to LA,
you're
putting like your artist stuff out there. Are you doing records? Are you touring? Are you doing none of that to try and do something that's the antithesis of what that is? Like, what are the things? What's the rabbit hole for you? You came to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
What were the things that you did that were kind of like groundbreaking for you as an artist, or like reaching your dreams, besides the Snoop Dogg and Chainsmokers? Give us like the stepwise motion.
Cool. Yeah. Well, from just the songwriting, before I got into like making a couple film properties, which I can talk about, It was always music centric. So I did a my favorite story and my favorite success in the music space was with these. I think you had it pulled up. A song called Paradise that did really well with this, or it did fairly. I wouldn't say really well. It did very, you know, compared to most independent songs, it did very well. But this guy Armin van Buuren, who's a DJ, a Dutch DJ, has a label called Armada Music, and he's like a very popular DJ and has like a very specific sound. So I write this song, a love song, as a
parachute or paradise.
Paradise. It should be on the top. Yeah, there it is. You see? That's the.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So this is it. All right.
Yeah. So basically, I. Yeah. And so.
Yeah, we'll talk about it first.
No, for sure. So this was a really cool, great story for all you independent producers and writers out there. Check this out. For every DJ that has a label, they build all these followers. They go, hey, we want people to pitch songs to us so we can just kind of put our label on it. And so we did a deal with Armada. I executive produced the record. I'm the artist. I'm the vocalist on it. I wrote a ballad, and these DJ producers, kind of colleagues of mine, were pitching me tracks. And I was kind of like, I don't really like writing over tracks, to be honest. I like being in a session. I'm kind of a purist that way. But these guys actually pitched me a track that was really vibey. And I was like, yo, we can go in on this, especially if we can open the project. Another buddy of mine who had like 150,000 subscribers on YouTube, but he was doing covers but wanted to write. So I was like, it'll be a win for him. He has a great distribution network. And then these guys were doing like a DJ track duo, like building tracks. So that this could be a nice. So I curated this session where we finished the song Paradise, and it was they kind of curated it for they're studying labels. That's not me. I'm not studying like everything that every labels are doing, but these DJs are doing that. So it was a cool collaboration. It was like five of us total. One guy I never even met. He was in Texas. Had the relationship with the A&R at Armada, and the guy's name was Freak, FREEK. I was like, how cool is that? It was just a collaborative thing, and we did a distribute. So Armin van Buuren toured on that song with my voice on it. So
that's
just
amazing.
It was so cool to think about like hundreds of thousands of people hearing the song. Yeah. I mean, it'd be cool if he called me up and was like,
"Let's do it live."
Yeah,
they never like to do it.
And they never do that, but I think it'd be way hotter if they did.
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear it. Go for it. Yeah, this is Paradise. All right, here it comes.
Oh, lot of music.
I've been holding on, but you came in. See me holding out before we reach the end. Nothing left to prove, nothing but the truth. Everything to lose, anything but you.
Is it's funny, it's like I've done a lot of tracks with DJs too. It's like it's such a different world and a different vibe. But when they make their magic, it's like, okay, this is cool. Like I see myself like just like rocking out to tracks.
Well, it's so funny because I'm like, I felt terrible because like they're like, you never heard of Armin van Buuren? I was like, yo, please don't take any offense. It's not that, it's just like I'm coming from like I wrote this song as a piano love ballad.
Right, right.
So when I heard that, I was like, I don't know how I feel right now.
Right, right.
I was like, that is not what I expected.
Right.
But then I trust that, and they're like, no, Corey, trust. Like
we. And it also has two lives that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It has the duality, which is cool.
Well, and that's what I think really tests the songs. Like, strip away the track. That's the music magic. Do you have a song, or do you have these vocal stems?
Yeah.
And I think people like us, dude, that's what's gonna last.
I agree.
And what artists? You know, what artists? What songs are going to be remembered the way, I mean, I'll throw it in, like, the way Stevie Wonder songs, the way John Lennon songs, the way that legendary songs would be remembered, Michael Jackson songs. I mean, those are going to be remembered forever. Man in the Mirror, I hope we'll all, because the standing the test of time is, to me, it's the three M's, it's the music, the melody, the message. And if you read those words, you're like, I'm starting with the Man in the Mirror, Corey James Verugia. I'm asking him, you, to change your ways. And he was like, when Michael's like, make that change, if you're being honest, you're like, you know what that change is.
Right.
If you're like still, you're in the growing and developing, artist in development, always developing. And, you know, I think that those messages, you can read them over coffee to your friends and they transcend. You hum the melody and it reminds people.
Yeah.
You could play the guitar riff and it reminds people. That's doing all the thinking, I think, that, you know, in Motown and the Funk Brothers, I like to put respect where it's due. And, you know, the most prolific group of about 12 guys, Berry Gordy and Marvin Gaye, and the Funk Brothers, dude, they're more prolific than, they have more hits than Elvis Presley, the Rolling Stones, the Beach Boys, the Beatles combined.
I know. It's crazy.
And dude, to be able to, like, I on Tuesday nights at Pips on La Brea, have you been there before?
No.
Holy shit, it's awesome, man. Barbara Morrison, she sang with everyone in Motown, and she has this soul that's on this like It's angelic. It's great. She has prosthetic knees and she's rocking, bro. She's doing
so much.
She has her own theater in her name. And like, so we went there for Lynn's birthday just not too long ago. They just passed on the 12th. And it was like, and we went there 2 weeks in a row. It was so captivating. And like, the people who play it are like some members who like from the Funk Brothers.
Wow.
So I'm like, dude, I'm just so just being in
that's
the
beauty of LA, man. That's like,
and they're so humble and they're so underpaid and undervalued. I'm like, nope, not on my watch. So I feel like we can like, you know, I think it's just through the magic of collaboration. Like, so I feel super grateful to be here. Thank you so much, dude.
Of course, dude, you've been a great guest. I want to have you play another song. Really? Speaking of music, melody, and message, man.
Come on.
You want to do another one?
I'd love to.
All right, let's do another one. What are you going to play us?
You know what? This one's got a little grit to it. I won't say too much, but it's called Crazy Ones. I wrote it, both of these songs. I got to give a shout out to my boy, Jack Knight. Jack Knight, the legend. He was a songwriter. I'll speak for him. He's a humble warrior, but he is a minister of the arts, but he prolific songwriter. He wrote for Bad Boy Records for 13 years for Sean Puffy Combs. As an independent, last time I talked to him, I was like, yo, Jack, as a post that experience with P. Diddy, how many songs you got, like, just in your catalog? He's about 300.
Wow.
But, like, he's a legend, and he's got From Kesha Cole to Black Street, like, on and on I could go.
Let's hear it, man.
So we co-wrote this together. We did Crazy Ones, and then that last one I played Really Ones. So here it is. Got me crucified. They've been keeping me crucified. Who's gonna pay my bail when it's like living in jail? Free people just passing by. They be just passing by. And you'll be right there to witness. You'll be right there to see. You'll be right there to witness. You will be right there to see. They say we were the crazy ones, but we are the greatest ones. Oh, yeah. They say we were the crazy ones, but we are the wild ones. This might sound a little strange. Soon as I claim my name, then I heard a voice that spoke to me. A singing angel with rosaries. And while you're still shooting for the stars, I'm trying to colonize Mars. Here's an invitation to roll with me. You can fill up your soul with me. And you will be right there to witness. You will be right there to see. You will be right there to witness. You will be right there to see. Oh, they say we were the crazy ones, but we are the greatest ones. They say we were the crazy ones, but we are the wild ones. They say it's the crazy ones who think that they can change the world, are typically the ones that do. So if you are one of those crazy boys and girls out there, this song is for you. This song is for you. Listen to it say, yes. Yeah, very nice. little crazy ending for a crazy song.
Hey, man, that was awesome. Seriously. Corey, where can people find you? We got to wrap up right now, but just tell people where people can find you online.
Man, because it's a music-centric audience, if you want to go straight to my favorite place, I just open up a lot of little playlists on my SoundCloud. So you can go to soundcloud.com/... Corey, or I think it's Mr. Core Radio. So MisterCoreDio. Get it? Mr. Core Radio.
I like that. Right? Clever.
So that's also my Anchor FM. You can support me there too if you want. You can follow along my journey, my artist development journey. And just like Netflix, if you like what you hear, you can tip if, you know, even like church. But yeah, awesome. So MisterCorey.com, MisterCoreY.com. Hit me up on Instagram, the Mr. Corey.
Well, Corey, the Mr. Corey, you've been a wonderful guest. Dude, we're going to have you back.
And you've been a super awesome host.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. The host with the most.
You said it right.
Come on now.
Come on, somebody.
Well, on behalf of Eddie, myself, and Corey, we'll see you guys next week.